had a shot of bourbon with those chocolate chip cookies?
I did have a beer before.
That is not the same thing.
It was well worth it. I was pushing the kid in the swing.
And just sipping on a beer?
Drinking a cold one?
Yes. Drinking, I'm excited for you.
Cold adult beverage.
That is a good afternoon.
Mabel ran through the sprinkler.
Aww.
Hey, you know, I never tell any funny stories about the other kids, but Jacob is my youngest boy child, and who's no longer a child. He's enormous now. But so when he was about four, his sister had a teacher named Ms. Lau. Mm-hmm. And Ms. Lau was a very attractive individual.
Mm-hmm.
And I never said anything about it because
you chose life.
So one day we were leaving the school. We had just walked his sister in and we were leaving, and he turns up and that's me. He goes, "Dad, I love Miss Lau." And I go, "Me too, buddy." Me too.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, that was our only discussion ever about that.
It was said, it was out, it was done.
That was it. We never had that discussion again.
Oh.
He was so cute.
What you been up to?
Hey, something cool happened this weekend.
What?
There's this place called Goofy's out on Canyon Lake, and I got invited to play, and it was a podcast video thing. So I went and played that. I got paid, which was nice.
Nice. Score. Double score. I got to play and I got paid. Usually only get one or the other.
And they even comped my wife and children's snacks. So that was nice too.
That's awesome. Ready for this interview?
Today, people, we are interviewing Michael Sweet, lead vocalist, co-founder of Striper. I'm excited. An author, songwriter, toured as a member of Boston, vocalist of Striper, and officially banned from your local Walmart for goddamn evil. Thank you, Michael Sweet.
Welcome to the show.
Goddamn the devil. That might have been a better title.
It might have been, actually. It's pretty good.
I was wondering why you didn't do that. I was like, it flows off my tongue. Evil's so much harder to say.
You know, I don't know. It's a good question, a good thought. But apparently it was the right title for Walmart to ban. So I'm glad we went with it.
I am for them to ban.
I am too. If you're going to be banned for something or someplace, that's the place to be banned at. You like Target more anyway, right?
Yeah, I'm definitely a Target. If I had to choose between Target and Walmart, Target all the way. Now, you get into Lowe's and Home Depot, I'm going to go with Lowe's.
Makes sense.
Well, all I'm saying is that I've been to Walmart at 2 a.m. after a show or two, and what they need to be banning is some of their customers' outfits at like 3 a.m.
Going to Walmart at 2 a.m. is very risky, very dangerous. You got to be very careful. Very careful.
Sometimes you just go when you can go. At least it's less crowded. Just...
It is.
People are wearing less clothes, though, and carrying things. Dangerous things.
We're going there at the same time. I mean, when we're touring, often we stop at Walmarts late at night.
Yeah.
And we go in there, and there's nothing to get. We have it all. We don't need anything. And yet we go in, and we buy something. something that we just buy more of. Really weird.
That's funny. Hey, I want to personally thank you for all that you've done for music and also for what you've done for me. Before y'all guys came out, I was in hell because my mom listened to country music, which I like country music, okay? Not a hater. But
you've written country music.
I have written country music, but she would never let me listen to what I wanted to until y'all guys came. Now, I had to prove that you weren't evil son of a guns. But after I got through that, I could play y'all anytime I wanted. And so that really helped in my relationship with my mom. You know, she still told my sisters to be quiet as the fire was raging because you'll wake your brother. But still, nice. I just appreciate you. And thank you for doing all that. And y'all guys mean a lot to me. And I've been waiting since the 80s to talk with you. So I had to parse down my questions, which is literally impossible because I literally know your whole catalog. And I even know some of your, most of your solo stuff.
You do, because I don't. Eric's on stage every night, so it's great that you do.
Hey, what do you do when you actually do really forget? I mean, jokes aside, what do you do when you forget a lyric and you're on stage? Because you've written a lot of songs, like a lot of songs.
That's the thing. I'm not joking.
Oh, my gosh, you're not joking. So what do you do? How do you save yourself in that moment?
I print out lyrics and have our stage manager tape them to my monitors. I have lyrics on my phone on a teleprompter app. When I was with Boston, I had to recall Boston lyrics that I had never sung before. So thank God they had an actual monitor wedge that was a teleprompter for me. And it's really interesting because there was somebody that got a lot of heat for using a teleprompter.
I think a lot of people have.
And it's really weird. I've always found that very interesting. Why in the world would you give anyone heat for that? The only thing I could say is whoever's given heat, let's put you in that position.
Right. That's a lot. You're up there. You have to remember what you're playing on the guitar. You have to remember the lyrics. You have to remember the timing. And there's so many songs and there's so many people in front of you. It has to be really hard to keep your composure.
It's really it's impossible sometimes, and it's especially with lyrics. I'm not sure why, but it's hard to recall lyrics sometimes. And it's nothing to do, I don't think, with age. I think what it's more so to do with is that, you know, we've released 14 albums.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're doing covers and we're doing this and that, and it changes the set list, and it's just hard to recall lyrics. It really is. Yeah. So I feel the pain of anyone out there in a band that's released so much music, having to recall lyrics as well. It's not easy.
And since you brought it up, what was it like touring with Boston? Because that's the thing that I really need to know.
It was really, really great. Amazing. The sad part, it was bittersweet because we were celebrating the life of Brad Delp, who had committed suicide. So it was really just bittersweet. You know, it was exciting, but sad. It was, you know, but to see all the fans coming together to acknowledge Brad and support Brad and all of that amazing stuff was really what it was all about. And to be a part of that was really, really special, really cool.
So I heard a story that basically you'd been trying to get PRS to send you some guitars. And then you said, I saw something that said, I got offered the opportunity to tour with Boston, so I let PRS know right away, and they sent me PRS guitars. Is that true?
Yes, I'll elaborate a little bit more. And I'm one of those guys, if you ask me a question, I'm going to answer it, and it gets me into trouble a lot.
Me too.
You know, if you ask me a question and it's true, I'm going to say, yeah. You know, I'm not going to say, hey, next question. I'll answer anything pretty much. Yes, basically. What happened, that whole situation was, I'm a big PRS guy. I like PRS guitars. So much so that I bought two of them. I had two custom made for me back in the late 90s and early 2000s in that time period. And I still have them. One's hanging right here in front of me. And if you take the pickups out, it says made for Michael Sweet, you know, custom made. And, you know, I love the guitars. So I would call them after that. I played them for a while exclusively in Striper in 03. You see playing a PRS. I call them and say, I really want to become an artist. And I spoke to a guy there at Paul Reed Smith. And he's probably just doing what he was asked to do. A guy by the name of Wynn. Really nice guy. Wonderful guy. And every time I'd call, he'd say, Michael, you know the drill. You know, there's nothing we can do right now. I'm not taking on any new artists. We're focusing more on the younger guys. You know, we can give you some pickups and help you out. So I say, OK. And then a year would pass. I'd call again. A year would pass. I'd call again. This went on for a long time. OK. Me trying to become a PRS artist. Finally, fast forward to 2008. Actually, late 07, once I found out I was in Boston, I call Wynn up and I say, hey, Wynn, it's Michael again. And he goes, oh, hey, buddy, how you doing? You know the drill. You know what I'm going to say, man. You know, I'm sorry. can't do anything. You know, he send you some pickups, you know. And I'm like, well, I got a new gig. And he goes, really? What are you doing? And I said, I'm going to be touring with Boston. We're doing 56 shows headlining. And he goes, Boston. And I said, yep.
Yeah, Boston.
And he goes, what do you need?
That's awesome.
And,
that's great.
He sent me 7 guitars.
Wow. So you just wanted 1 or 2 and he sent you 7.
He sent me 7 guitars and I thought, wow, this is amazing. Oh my gosh. But yeah, I would have been happy with 1, but the real moral of the story is when I look back on that, I just think how sad, you know, that here I am, an artist who paid for guitars, played them exclusively, and that's what it took for me to get the respect of the company. It kind of blew my mind. Needless to say, I don't play Paul Reed Smith guitars anymore.
Okay.
Howie.
I mean,
that's all right. I mean, I kind of don't blame you.
I have 2 Paul Reed Smith guitars, the ones they made that I kept, and I don't plan on getting rid of. And I have my two Boston guitars. They're called Miras, and I love them. They're great. I'm not getting rid of those. I just don't. When I say I don't play them, what I mean by that is I don't endorse them. I don't.
Right.
You know, I used to talk about them in interviews, and that was it for me. You know, and it's like it's not it anymore for me. You know, does that make sense?
Yes, that makes total sense. What is your favorite guitar to play just daily? What is the one you enjoy playing the most?
Well, I still enjoy playing the PRSs. They're awesome. They play great. But I mean, my most enjoyable guitar, if I had to say, right now I'm playing Sully's. S-U-Y-S. Made by John Sullivan, who, you know, got a lot of his skills from the old Jackson days, Grover Jackson, which is who I also used to endorse back in the 80s. And I love the Sully guitars. I had a Washburn line for a while. I love those. I mean, all the guitars that I have are great. I love them all. They're just all different. But if I had to pick one guitar, ooh, that's so hard.
Well, let's think of it like this. You're walking through the house and you're like, you know what? I'm just going to unconsciously grab a guitar. What are you going to gravitate to first, where you unconsciously just grab it? Because I have one guitar that I go to every time when I'm not thinking about it.
Well, that one guitar, oddly enough, after the story I just told, is my custom.
No shit.
4.
Dang it. Old habits.
That is a good story.
Faithful. It's the one that... It could hang on a wall among 20 other guitars, and you pick all the other 19 up, and the necks are bowed, and that neck's never bowed. It's Old Faithful, you know. It's just it always sounds good, plays good, looks good, and I use that in the studio a lot. And I love my PRSs, you know. I just don't play them live anymore. I endorse Sully's, and I love those too. I use those in all the videos and play them on all the albums. My Sully's. Oh, nice. Yeah.
In 2013, you recorded The Second Coming. It had 2 new tracks and then 14 other re-recordings. It had like To Hell with the Devil, Calling on You, Free. It sounded like to me you redid those songs to control your publishing so that you could then approve it for your music for sync. Since you've redone that, have you been able to get any big syncs with movie or TV? And if so, what?
Nothing major, but definitely some smaller things along the way. But, you know, small enough where I wouldn't even recall it right now. But definitely in other ways, we've been able to license stuff out. We own the rights to that album, so we licensed it out. And we can do whatever we want with it at any given time. But what happened with that, what inspired us to do that is Hollywood, which owned the catalog, the original catalog, was getting calls for sync. And we wouldn't hear about it. Okay. We hear about it from the company wanting the sync rights. And it just got old. It's like, gosh, we'd like to just be the ones to be able to say yay or nay. So we went and re-recorded those songs. And then we instantly became that because we own those masters. And interestingly enough, we're getting back the rights to all those old original masters anyway. They all started coming in, and it's a great feeling because we have some big plans for those albums as well.
Well, I'm glad y'all guys are going to be making that money, because that can be a large amount of money, especially now that you have streaming and stuff going on. So that's another way to supplement your income. So let's go ahead and move into Yahweh. This was co-written with Clint Lowry from Seven Dust. Cool intro, cool riff. My question is, how did you get the idea? And then how did you record the intro vocals for Yahweh? Because the beginning is like very different than once you get into the song itself. How did you come up with that idea? And then how did you physically do it?
Well, the first part of the question with Clint, basically, I reached out to Clint, met Clint, found out he was a Striper fan and grew up to some degree on Striper music. I suggested, hey, let's write some stuff together. And he was all into it every bit as much as I was. And he sent me a couple ideas, and there was one idea in particular that had that riff, you know, that basic riff idea. And I took that riff and wrote Yahweh. And after he heard Yahweh, it was difficult for him to kind of hear the riff that he had written. But that riff is there. It's the foundation of that song. Had it not been for Clint, that song wouldn't have ever come to pass. Wouldn't have happened, at least in my opinion. So God bless Clint for sending that, because it's amazing. And then in terms of the choir, I always felt like that song needed to be epic and have, it's almost like four songs within one song. The breakdowns and the way it, in terms of tempo, it changes dramatically four times. Literally, I wanted it to start off in an epic sort of way. And what better way to do that than with the big, ginormous choir?
How big are we talking about? Because that's a big sound at the beginning of that song.
It is. What it is, if I can recall that properly, it's Oz and I, and I want to say five other people. So seven voices. One of those voices being a female voice. And we layered that, multi-tracked that. You know, we would do one part the same, sing it in unison, stack it, triple it, double it, then triple it. Then we do the next part, double it, triple it, next part, double it, triple it. And then you just started building all these voices. So all of a sudden you've got five parts, including octaves, with seven voices times three. So you can do the math on that. That's a lot of voices. And then we added sections where we were all singing different parts. So it became this just enormous choir. And it sounds like, you know, just a big, huge choir.
It's really cool. And you really scream really well on that song.
Yeah, I tell you what I did. I was singing that lead vocal, I was wearing a size 30 waist. And then I wasn't hitting those notes quite like I wanted. I went up and I got a 28 waist, and it just came out much easier.
Well, that's good. I'm glad no one had to help with that, like a medical intervention had to occur. I'm glad.
Yeah, it was wild. Those tight pants just made me hit those notes.
Well, the other thing is you can't undo the medical intervention, too. So There you go. You can take off pants, but.
That's an old stupid joke that I use. No, in terms of high notes, I tell you what I do in all seriousness. I do the high notes first when I record, and then I sing the song after I do the high notes. And it works good for me. It works very well for me doing it that way.
That's interesting.
You do that not to blow out your voice?
Yep. With me is if I'm singing for 3 or 4 hours a song, you know, multiple takes and then punching in and fixing things and what have you. I find that by the time I get to that 3 or 4 hour end, when I go to try to hit a clear high note with the top end on it and the power, it's not quite the same as it was 3 hours ago. Yahweh, Yahweh, Yahweh.
about No Hell to Pay, and then we have our final question, and we'll let you go. Thank you so much again in advance.
We appreciate it.
Of course, you guys. And I like that title better than No More Hell to Pay. No Hell to Pay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did I write it wrong? Oh, how embarrassing.
No, I'm being serious. No Hell to Pay would be amazing, because that would mean there'd be no hell. That would be awesome. But No More Hell to Pay means that you get a break from the hell. You know, there's no more. And that's when we just added that song to the set. I love that song. It's got a real cool mid-tempo kind of chug to it. And it's really one of my favorites, for sure.
So in the video, I love the video. Y'all are guys are out in the desert. What the heck is Robert doing with his drums? Y'all guys are all playing. He's out there swinging with his bass drum and doing a bunch of stuff. What is he doing?
People went crazy. I'll never forget when we released that video, all the comments about people that were so mad that he didn't have a full kit. And to be honest, just laying it out there, we shot a video for the song Sympathy. That studio in Las Vegas. It was about 110 degrees. We were in an air-conditioned studio. Then we had to go shoot another video, do two videos in one day. We wanted a completely different scene. The director wanted it done out in the desert area. So by the time we got out to the desert, got out of the cars, and started lugging guitars over to the spot he wanted to shoot the video, it was 110 degrees.
Oh, no.
We didn't want to spend time setting up a drum kit. And literally, I kid you not, just walking over to the spot, we were dripping wet. It was insane. And out in the middle of the sun. Mm-mm. And it's pretty brutal. So we took the easy way out. And, you know, fans didn't appreciate that.
I thought it was so funny. I just laughed and laughed. As soon as
I saw it, I was like, that has something to do with the weather. I feel it. My old bones felt it. I was like, it's too dang hot. It's too damn hot.
But that's a cool video. That was a cool video.
Yeah.
I think even hotter than 110. I want to say it was like 113 or something. It was brutal. And we were dying. Like, my lips were sticking together. It was brutal. Subconsciously, we were rushing through the video. Like, let's just get this done.
You're like, let's wrap it up, guys.
Two times two, guys. And then after the first time, my brother Robert, he's like, guys, can we go? You know, it's like he was done from the start.
You're asleep. Whoever drove hated the fact that they were a driver, because everybody else fell asleep. What advice would you give a young musician?
Oh, gosh, that's always a loaded question. There's so much advice to give.
How about what's the best advice you were ever given as a young musician?
Well, I mean, I think the best advice I've ever been given is it came direct from actions versus words from my parents. They're musicians. So I learned from them what to do and what not to do firsthand. But I mean, my advice to musicians would be, you know, stick to your convictions. So in other words, do what you're an artist. You're being artistic, writing music. So, you know, let that be true art. Don't be told how your art's going to be. You know, think about Stryper. If we were told Enigma Records, when we turned in the lyrics, they considered dropping us because we were singing about, they read the lyrics and realized, God, they're singing about Jesus. And they're like, they were skeptical and they thought about letting us go. And, you know, we stuck to our convictions and said, this is what you get, take it or leave it. We're not changing any lyrics. And they kept us on, and the rest is history. Stay true to your convictions. Be who you are, and the rest will pay off, because that's going to come across to the fan base. They're going to know what's real versus what's not. And, you know, there's nothing like cookie cutter music, cookie cutter artists. We all know who they are. You can spot them anywhere.
Be gentle. I can be one of those.
Don't be gentle.
We know what it is. And it's very often it's the most successful stuff out there in terms of sales and whatnot. It doesn't make it. It doesn't give it integrity, though. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't give it clout. And I think what gives music clout and artists and bands clout is, you know, being real, being original, and sticking with that. Whether people love it or hate it, just stick to your guns and follow that dream, and don't follow somebody else's dream.
Oh, I like that.
That's good.
Follow your dream, not somebody else's dream.
Sounds like you've been practicing that for a few minutes.
It's written right here on the wall. So I can see it because I'm blind. You guys know that. So
we're gonna let you go, but I have one thing to say. I would like to thank your team, Shelly in specific, Richardson,
for
working very with nice. Me because yeah. I get off work and then I kind of spend time with my family.
Yeah.
And she was like, well, we need to go this early. And I was like, well, this is time with my family, and because then I don't see them the rest of the night. And I was like, can we do halvesies? And so y'all went for halvesies, and I appreciate, and I know you're a family man too. And I appreciate that, because sometimes people just won't work with you and they're like, take it or leave it, you know? And I appreciate Shelly, and she was like helping the whole time, heard the cats on both sides, it sounded like. So I really appreciate her.
I'm so happy we got to do it, and I hope it turns out great. Keep me posted and Shelly posted.
Did you want to talk about your tour?
Oh,
real quick.
Yeah, we got the tour coming up. It starts the end of April. And, well, we're doing Monsters of Rock Cruise prior to that. And then the tour starts the end of April. And we're doing, I think, 30-something shows. We got a lot of touring going on this year.
Where really are you starting off at?
Everybody can go to Stryper.com and follow the tour link. And you can see all the dates right there.
Awesome.
I want to go on a cruise that's playing a bunch of rock music. How do I get into that?
Cool. I tell you what, it's pretty cool. You would enjoy it. It's very.
I would drink a lot and much enjoy it.
the only time you won't enjoy it is if the seas are rough.
Choppy.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Michael. I hope you have a great evening.
Are you an emerging Texas artist looking for a platform to share your talent? Well, you're in luck. All you need to do is send your videos right here to videos@texasscenetv.com. You'll have your shot for your video to be shown to the world right here on the newest, hottest channel for music, Texas Scene TV.
Hey, thanks for listening tonight. Oh, wait. Let's get through these chuckles, and then maybe people, thank you for listening tonight. My voice is calm because I do not want to encourage someone listening to act up in any way. Thank you for listening and enjoying us, Mr. Michael Sweet. We appreciate you for hanging out with us tonight. And now I'm going to kick it on over to Renell.
I just would like just a moment to say that you like it when I run off at the mouth. And you get a kick out of me fully embarrassing myself. So don't act like you're trying to keep the other person on the call calm, because that has not ever been your MO. Your MO is the opposite. Your MO is, it's like, how embarrassed can Raynell be? Can I be the one to cause it?
I did not cause it.
No, she's kind of been a bitch the last couple weeks because she's in pain. That's just my excuse, but I have been a full-on bitch. And this is my moment. So don't act innocent. Anyway, thank you for joining us on Sound Pollution this week.
Yes,
thank
you.
I sound angrier than I am. It's the pollening, as I'm calling it. Please remember to like, follow, subscribe, download. I don't think I have any other updates.
We don't have any other updates.
Are we doing okay? What's happening?
No, we have just went through the gauntlet, and we are getting ready to ramp up for our next set of interviews, which are going to be totally awesome. One of the interviews is going to be my producer, AJ Vallejo. That's going to be a great discussion. He also received, with his band Love and Chaos with Kendall Beard, they received Band of the Year in Texas, or New Band of the Year or something like that. So he'll probably talk about that. That'll be kind of cool.
Anything else? All right, everybody. I think that is a wrap for this week's episode of the Sound Pollution Podcast. Remember to get out there and make